Welcome. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. Here on The Deep State, we go deep into stories that the mainstream media just don't want you to know. The Deep State imprisoned me once upon a time. Well, now we're going after The Deep State. I'd like to bring on Thomas Drake. Tom is not just a longtime friend of mine. He's a former NSA senior official and a noted whistleblower. We have a mutual friend, Bruce Fein, who's an eminent constitutional scholar and attorney here in the United States. And he believes that the entire system is broken, that we need to go back to the very fundamentals of the Constitution as it was written by the founding fathers. Do you think that that's possible? And if so, do you believe that's how we get our September 10th country back?
I think it's an open question, and there is no assurance that it's possible to sort of restore, I'm going to say, the original. Mm-hmm. For all the faults and foibles, and there are, and then sort of the original sins of America, and many of them were built into the Constitution. I mean, we have to be honest with our own history. We have to be really careful not to rewrite it in the name of what I call faux patriotism.
Yes.
But I think the jury's out. If you put the jury is out that this is where there's no get out of history free card, sort of the get out jail free card from Monopoly. Most people, by the way, don't even follow the rules of Monopoly and wonder why the game, you know, ends up being, no, there are actual rules of Monopoly. If you play by the rules, then it might be a better game. There was a recent article about that. The rules that were set down about what it means to be an American was the Constitution, and it even built in the mechanism by which they realized it was living. You could amend it. We're way, way past all that. We're just losing what it means to be an American. I don't know. I'm not a betting man, but I'm not going to put money, you know, on bringing back sort of America. And I'm not talking about let's bring back America of the 1950s,
right,
or bring back the America from some made up or recast golden age.
You're right.
Or gilded age, to be honest. Part of it is a human condition. I mean, remember, even the founding fathers, all feet of clay, right? All men with feet of clay. They were worried. I mean, if you go back, I actually recently, because I wrote this article that very few people have read, which is my reflective take on what is 250 years of us breaking away from the British crown, right? An empire to create our own nation based on a piece of paper. I went through Articles of Confederation for a few years, and that was an abysmal failure. So, you know, they knew that there were no guarantees. They knew that. Even Franklin, back to Benjamin Franklin, a woman reporter purportedly asked him after the secret conclave in Philadelphia, what did you guys like create in there? What did you guys build or make? And he said, a republic, if, and this is an if, this is not like, it's going to stay this way if you can keep it. If, wow, it was conditional. No question it was conditional. Remember, all empires end up in the dustbins of history.
Yeah, it's true.
You go back a few, you know, the millennia, the 5,000-6,000 years of recorded history, it's pretty clear where empires end up. And I'm not sure. I mean, I make a case for what it would take, even in my article on my own website, I make a case for what it would take to redeclare our independence.
Right.
But now it's redeclare independence from within.
It is from within.
From within.
Yes.
That was the fear. Even Lincoln himself, it's from within. That was where we would lose it. It would be from within.
Yep. It's true. Where do you believe?
I'm not sure. It's not certain to me.
Yeah, it's one of those questions that there's really not an answer to. But I think
right. It needs to be asked. If you care, as I still do, some people are like, why you bother, Tom? Why bother? You lost your career at the height, you know, of your earning powers, and you have no pension or retirement. Why do you bother even going on any podcast or going to any conference or even speaking out or even writing about this?
Yeah.
Because it still matters.
It does.
Who we are and all
this. It's the right thing to do. Yeah.
You're about to ask me, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, you and I are both former intelligence professionals. Where do you believe government transparency breaks down the most often in intelligence or in intelligence and security? Is there one bottleneck that causes the greatest problem that can be fixed?
In terms of intelligence?
Yes.
The politicization of it, the huge pressure that's put on, well, I was just going to say, you know, Schedule C.
Yep. And a Schedule C is
highly corrupted.
Political appointee in the American
Schedule
government.
C, political appointee, putting enormous pressure on what was supposed to be the civil service. I mean, we had to have a whole, basically, a reformation of civil service quite a while ago because of nepotism and just abuse and a lot of corruption. But you also have this, you know, then you have this institutional dynamic, which very few people actually speak about, where the institutions themselves, which are made up of obviously people, that the preservation of the institution overrides the purpose for which the institution was created.
Yeah.
In essence, it loses, as I found out at NSA, they're just this drift from its core mission, this drift from it's supposed to be a public, you know, it's even if it's a more secret institution, if you're talking intelligence, that you have a higher level of obligation. You have a higher level of responsibility and accountability because you are conducting for legitimate, often very legitimate reasons, your activities, because it is a dangerous world. There are a lot of threats and it can be ugly.
There are.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I lay awake at night like a lot of Americans and I just doom scroll through TikTok. And one of the things that I didn't even realize I was interested in until the algorithm sort of pointed it out to me by giving me just this constant feed is people who they're called First Amendment auditors. And they will, as an example, go in front of a bank and just stand there with a camera. Because, of course, here in the United States, it is legal to film people in public.
Yes.
Invariably, the people doing the filming are kicked, punched, spat on, and almost every day have the police called on them. It's like people don't even know their own rights and civil liberties, let alone their constitutional rights that are guaranteed to us by the founding fathers. So if the average if the average American doesn't even know what his or her rights are, should we expect our elected officials to know our rights and to stand up to protect our rights, or have we already lost this battle?
No, they shouldn't. And if good people do nothing, and to paraphrase another famous quote, then evil will prevail. The power seeks power for its own sake, and that's what you're increasingly seeing. And then people don't want to give up the power. This is sort of the Catch-22 Joseph Heller novel. You know, once we have the power, even when it becomes obvious that the power seeks to keep and expand its own power just to stay in power, well, who's going to stop us? Because you're not in power, we are.
That's
so
right.
Then what?
Yeah.
And remember, in some cases, the power looks for excuses to justify crackdowns. It looks for excuses to further intrude on the lives of people. It looks for excuses to create First Amendment free zones, just like we have this 100-mile Constitution free zone at the border, which means, wait a minute, the border is 100 miles wide now? Or it's even wider if you count every international point of departure or arrival in the United States, which means you have incredible amounts of area, lots of locations in America, millions and millions of people that are effectively no longer under the Constitution, even by law, when they're traveling in and out through these points of departure and arrival, which is usually international or declared international airports. there's not just, it's not just, you know, it's not just JFK, it's not just PWI or Dulles, it includes a whole host of other airports. So here's what I was about to answer to you, because I think this is something that hasn't arisen just since 9/11. I was classically educated, and this is sort of the, you would call it the traditional conservative, traditional liberal. This is where labels have just sort of all disappeared in terms of their original meaning, which is another whole issue with, we're now redefining what even words mean. Like, the dictionary doesn't even apply anymore. It's whatever I want to make it, or whatever I can assert it is for my own purposes. I remember all the classes I had, even going back to grade school, in terms of government, civic education, world history, the Constitution, state history. And there was, you would go further and further and more sophisticated as you moved into middle school, you moved into high school.
That's right.
What's happened to civic education in the United States? Remember, one of the fundamental weaknesses of any form of democracy, including ours, which is a special form, constitutional republic, they didn't call it a democracy back even 250 years ago. Constitutional republic,
yes,
sort of the best of the Western tradition and the British Empire, and you know, all of the rights where we're going to find a way in which we can actually govern ourselves. I mean, that was the fundamental question.
So in that respect, we really can't trust the government.
No.
We can't really trust our elected officials. Are we forced to trust the very representatives of the deep state that we're railing against? And what I mean specifically is, at the CIA, and I'm sure that this was true at NSA as well. Well, I know it is, because I know you, and we've talked about this a number of times. In a perfect world, if you see evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, illegality, or threats to the public health or public safety, you go to the inspector general, or through your chain of command. But let's say your chain of command is corrupt. You go to the inspector general. That's what we're all supposed to do. We've all been taught that. Go to the inspector general. He's an independent voice. He'll give you a fair shake, and he will protect your identity. And that's just not the case. Either the inspectors general...
That didn't happen to me. Remember, people forget...
It especially didn't happen to you.
And I knew even then, people said I was naive, but no, I knew that those were exposure channels. I already knew that. But I was going to follow the rules. But remember, even the inspector general system was set up in 1978 because of all the abuses of power.
Yes.
And all the church committee and the Pike committee and all the other commissions, where we just went off the rails in the 1970s. And this was to basically reestablish at least some check and balance.
That's right.
On, so you wouldn't just run roughshod even within the system. Because, I mean, again, even in my early days in the military, you would see all the signs up about whistleblowers, and if you see something that's not right, and there was even rewards. People would get rewards because you wanted to ensure that we were accountable as servants to the people. This whole, this people forget, it's public servant, whether it's uniform military or whether it's government, civilian.
That's
it,
right.
Is a public servant. It's not to line your pockets. I grew up more in the, what I consider the real capitalism, which is a free enterprise system. When I was living most of my youth, and not all of it, the first part was in Texas, but in Vermont. And it was really the free enterprise system. We're so far away from that, because now you've got all this, you know, this is sort of what Eisenhower warned the nation about in his farewell address in 1961 that just no one really read at the time. And now, you know, the military-industrial complex, he led the military-industrial complex asserting itself in the 1950s.
Yeah.
He was worried about what
CIA
would happen.
His CIA director and his Secretary of State were the poster children for the deep state.
But then all this stuff came out in the 70s. All the fact that NSA for years and years and years had been routinely violating the Fourth Amendment in secret under all these special programs, and interestingly enough, in partnership oftentimes with certain corporations, just giving over data.
That's right.
Just giving it over.
That's exactly right.
And so all that came to a head. And so they put into place, you know, the permanent select committees, both Senate and House, the FISA, the original FISA, which had been amended 5 times to keep up with the technology and the times.
Yes.
In the ensuing years, that was put into place. The night, this is what I want to go back to, the Inspector General's Act, that was put into place in 1978. That was supposed to be independent within the executive to keep a check on the executive, because you didn't want people, in essence, getting away.
Right.
With wrongdoing and corruption and crimes, because you're violating the oath, you're violating your accountability to the American people. To me, there's a fidelity to the oath, which extends to all the activities you engage in as a public servant. There does need to be guardrails.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've heard the argument, who cares? We don't need guardrails. Well, then we're no different than anybody else. The pretense that we're actually different as Americans, I guess, doesn't really matter anymore.
Let me ask you about that. I agree with you, first of all, that the inspectors general have an inherent weakness. We're not going to get satisfaction from the inspectors general.
No.
Well, there was one at the CIA who John Helgerson, who tried his best, but the deep state is real, and they ran roughshod over him. What about these congressional committees, whether it's the Senate or House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence or the other oversight committees for foreign affairs and for national defense? And what about the courts at checking the surveillance state? Is there any reason for us to be hopeful?
Uh-huh. There is. I mean, this is interesting you mention it, because remember, there is a reason why Article 1, and we're back to the Constitution. To me, this is fundamental civics in terms of, you can say, how it's supposed to work. You know, I remember the ditties even in school. How does a bill happen, right? Yeah, you know, how does a bill become law, right? And there's all these, like, cartoonish ways in which, and they had these little film clips. I remember the old film clips with how does a bill become law?
Yeah.
We are so far away from how does a real bill that is supposed to be making us a better country, is supposed to provide for the common events, you know, as well as the general welfare, right? I mean, it's like, wait a minute. We're supposed to, aren't we? I mean, isn't this about the people, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union? So go back to the checks and balances, three branches of the government. Why is Article 1 the first article? Because that was the one branch of government that had a much more direct connection to we the people. But see, that's become its own career. And they got their own health system. You only have to serve a few years. You get a really nice retirement.
Yeah.
People basically homestead. You got people, both parties dying in office because they will not let go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where it comes back to, right? I mean, if Article 1, they have the, you could say, ultimate power, when it comes to the three branches. They're supposed to be checking both the executive and also even the judiciary. I mean, that's where you get into impeachment, all that, because the Congress can do all that.
Yeah, it's
true.
But
if they're increasingly either letting go of their power or letting the executive take too much of it, guess what? You're right. Or is an excuse, or you just get into this hyper. We've had partisanship since day one of the United States of America.
Sure.
We have. But we're at a level now where it's incredibly difficult because there's all these interests. You got to remember, what about all the unelected influences, literally unelected influences with massive amounts of money, lobbyists, corporations. And I remember even when I was at NSA, that you would hear in the back rooms, I mean, this is, you know, the contractor side, wow, I mean, this is not capital. It's like, this is command economy. I get guaranteed income. Let's have this really big contract. And I don't care if we've already solved the problem. Let's spend a few billion to resolve a problem that we've already solved. Because guess what? If we keep the problem going, as one of my fellow NSA colleagues said, Bill May, we'll keep the money flowing.
You've just described
perverse incentive.
Yes, it does. You've just described the entire method by which the U.S. government operates. That's
we shouldn't be surprised at what we're getting.
That's right. You get exactly what you pay for.
Yep.
That's exactly right. So I'm going to repeat myself. You can't trust the inspectors general. You can't trust your chain of command. You can't trust the congressional oversight committees. You can't really trust the courts. I've never seen the courts as polarized as they were now. So knowing today what you know, because you're an expert on this issue, would you blow the whistle on waste, fraud, abuse, and illegality to NSA again? Or would you do things differently? And if so, what would you do differently?
That is one of the more... I've had this question asked to me multiple times. I'm only slightly hesitating because the fundamental issue has remained the same. If you blow the whistle like I did with every single channel that existed, all of them, every single one, internal and even external to the government, still within the government, external to the agency, but still within the government, there was always the one final option, as I well know from Ellsberg.
Yes.
You always had the option, bring a redress of grievances against your own government.
Yeah.
Even with the restrictions of the First Amendment, when you're in the secret side of the government or quote unquote the deep state, right? There are restrictions, but you always had the option to go to the press.
Yes.
But then, of course, that was fraught with enormous peril. And I knew this all along. I knew that, that my chances of getting anything turned around, because remember, all these decisions had been made at the highest levels. I mean, these were authorized by Bush through Cheney.
Yes.
In my particular case, to engage in this mass warrantless surveillance program, plus a whole bunch of other, we're just going to spend tons and tons of money because, hey, why not, right? It was basically, and this is Congress, yeah. And I will even give you some of the anecdotes. I remember being at the 50th anniversary, and I'll just give you this one. Staff manager, House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. He has one of those like publishers, clearinghouse fake checks,
right.
really big. There was literally a number with nine zeros after it. And what he's doing, he's up on stage on the main dais as they're giving out awards and all this other stuff. 50th anniversary since the secret founding of NSA. So this is 2002, fall of 2002. And I was there, military, they had, the honor guard and all the flags and everything else. And right. You had George Tenet and all the high level mucky mucks. You had former directors, deputy directors, all in attendance, right? He's got this big publisher's check. And Hayden is up on stage. So he's basically, you get the picture, right? There's that picture right. Where you're handing the check over to the recipient. And I couldn't hear him, but it had a direct line of sight, and I could see him looking down at the head table, which is where George Tenet, then DCI, also the director of the CIA, right? This is before the DNI came into the picture. Yep. And he said, he's pointing to the check, and then he's pointing back at Tenet. He said, "I got my money, George. I got my money. That's all that mattered. I got my money."
Scandalous.
That reminds me, my own number three, who I initially reported to for the first not quite a year, the number three headed the Signals Intelligence Directorate, 10,000 people plus at the time, worldwide, including headquarters at Fort Meade, Maryland. I remember we were going around the campus, as they called it, the campus to console the workforce. They knew we had utterly failed the nation.
Yeah.
We had not kept people out of harm's way. Almost 3,000 people were murdered that day. The system had been blinking red per George Tenet for 3 years.
Yep.
And
I remember it well.
I was in one of these conference rooms with one part of NSA, and she says, "No." Because she said, "Didn't we fail the nation? Don't we have a responsibility? We've got to like re-examine ourselves, how we failed. Oh no, we're gonna get all the money we want and then some." 9/11 was a gift to NSA. Yes. 9/11 was a gift to NSA. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you have sort of the you can say that the deep state, I have to say it this way, was captured by a core set of career government civilians in partnership with their Schedule C appointees.
Yes.
Up to and including the president.
Yeah.
And engaging in activity that was not only unnecessary, but was completely contrary to the laws of the land on a number of fronts. And it also, the great warning of Eisenhower just was just, the spigots were just opened up.
You know, I...
NSA, this, you got an example? And I used to work at CIA too,
yes,
but
yes.
At NSA, which I'm more familiar with, of course, because that's where I was a senior executive, so... A lot of insight, a lot of access, a lot of executive sessions, even with the director, right? Like the top 40, as used to be the part of the top 40 at NSA. The budget on September 10th, 2001 was about $4 billion.
Yeah.
And now, then? You say, yeah, $4 billion. Well, I can tell you within that first year, it basically doubled. And then some. And now it's just, you know, I don't even know what the numbers are anymore because it's all hidden.
It is. It's all hidden.
There's just an extraordinary amount of money was pumped in across the board to all the, you know, 17, 18 intelligence agencies or entities.
Yes.
That make up the so-called IC, in quotes, as you can see, air quotes here.
Yep.
Massive. I mean, we don't even know what the, and some of it's hidden, you know,
it
black
is.
Projects.
It's
and
it's gigantic.
And you got Title 10, Title 50 authorities and, you know, you got military that can hide, and you've got special op type stuff and JSOC stuff. And then, of course, you got CIA. And, you know, it's just
true.
As if money was going to solve the problem of the failure, which, yeah, it's going to buy you. Guess what's going to buy you? A lot of influence,
yeah.
A whole lot of contracts, and a pile of surveillance, and all
oh boy,
kinds
yes.
of under the table activity that just, and we thought there was a problem with the intelligence community going off the rails in the 70s with all the exposures.
Thanks for being with us today, Tom. And thank you for watching. This is The Deep State, and remember, keep asking the questions the government wants you to ignore. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.